Hello, I'm Jacob Davis, and welcome to Critics Talk. My guest today is Rachel Rockwell, a widely acclaimed director, very famous on the Chicago scene. She's recently done Brigadoon with the Goodman, and West Side Story, and Billy Elliot at Drury Lane. And I gave Billy Elliot a very good review, as did almost everybody else, I believe. It's a wonderful show. Rachel, why don't you say hi?
Hi there. Thanks for having me today.
So, why don't we begin, for the people who might not already know, by telling us a little bit about Billy Elliot the musical and what it was that attracted you to doing this show.
Well, Billy Elliot is a depiction of the 1984 British miner strike, which happened in the north of England. And it's about a community that is forced out of work by a strike, trying to better their lives and the struggles that they have for the nearly whole year that they are on strike. And the son of one of the miners, during this time, finds a love for dance, ballet in particular. And it's a journey for that whole community to get behind that boy and help support him all the way to the Royal Ballet School and ultimately to a career in ballet. It's a beautiful family story. It's incredibly relevant. I mean, we need to look no further than Detroit right now to see what happens when a community relies on an industry and that industry is taken away. And then how those people have to adapt and how communities have to change. It's about a family coming to understanding and love and support and how the arts is an incredibly healing force for any community.
It is, and it's not that easy a process for either the main character or the town to embrace his choice of art either. That's a conflict in itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, they go from not understanding at all to it being the beacon of hope during their time of crisis, and all of them rallying around this boy because his success feels like their success. You know, and in every community that is rich in the arts, I think you find that there is greater tolerance, greater understanding, where different is compelling and not scary. Mm-hmm. You know, it really does teach a powerful message about art and acceptance and love, and it's an incredibly uplifting story.
It is uplifting. Now, this story, I think, was originally a movie directed by Stephen Daldry. It was written by Lee Hall and mm-hmm. starred Jamie Bell. And later on, Stephen Daldry directed the original Broadway adaptation of this show, and that went on tour. Now, and I think that what you're doing here is the Midwest regional debut of this show, which is different from that Daldry production, which
yes.
came here several years back. So it seems to me, I saw that production on Broadway, that the musical adaptation was somewhat darker than the film, and that I think your adaptation is also different, maybe a little bit darker than Daldry's. Do you think...
I find it interesting that you think it's darker than the film, mm-hmm. because I find the film very dark. Mm-hmm. And I found the musical to be quite light in some aspects when it took turns into fantasy. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a matter of excising some of those fantasy moments or making them feel like they all came from the world that we were in instead of, you know, taking a trip into kind of a musical theater,
right.
Genre, you know, vein. And that was kind of the goal for me, was to make it, for me, feel very cohesive. Because mm-hmm. it was an incredibly dark time in English history. The other day when I was watching CNN and saw Baltimore, the riots in the streets mm-hmm. in Baltimore, those riots looked so much like what happened in England. However, it was a police state that was really created by Margaret Thatcher. And the men were provoked and they were, you know, mm-hmm. abused by police. And there was quite a big cover-up for a number of years. And, mm-hmm. and it was a pretty, pretty dangerous and sad time in their history mm-hmm. when one of the most major unions was broken.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one of the examples I was talking about is how in the film, there's a sequence of Billy's angry dance.
Yeah.
That in the musical ends Act One, where his father's not going to allow him to pursue an audition at the Royal Ballet School. And in the film, this is something he does by himself with his friend it's a tap dance. And in the musical adaptations, including yours, it's a metaphorical confrontation.
Right in the middle of the riot. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do believe that that is one aspect where it is much darker than the film, but it's also, I think, very necessary for people to feel that conflict. It's a great way to theatricalize Billy's internal conflict and make it relate to mm-hmm. the bigger picture of the story.
Mm-hmm. So, was it intimidating or liberating to have the Midwest debut adaptation? I imagine that Drury Lane has been very supportive of you. You seem to have a good relationship with them. Your West Side Story, also excellent.
Thank you.
But when you were imagining a concept, were there parts you were going through thinking, I like this, I want to emphasize this?
Absolutely. We have meetings up to a year in advance of a production where we start to talk about, you know, what we want this to be. For me, Billy Elliot has been a property that since I saw it, I wanted to do it immediately because it has everything in it that I love. Major opportunities for dance, a major opportunity to show community people, children, although mid-process, I sometimes regret that decision. And it's, you know, it's the kind of show that I really wanted to get my hands on. However, that being said, when you have as much respect for the original production as I had, mm-hmm. it's intimidating. You don't get a Billy Elliot very often, and you don't want to screw it up, mm-hmm. you know? Because mm-hmm. it can be career defining in two ways,
yes.
great or not great. So you want to make sure that if you're going to do it, you really do it. And, mm-hmm. You know, the trick is to surround yourself by the smartest collaborators that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that in Kevin Debonais, the scenic designer, and Roberta Ducek, my dear friend, as the music director, and Lee Fisness as the lighting designer, Colin Welford conducting, mm-hmm. Christina Dare dialect. It's you have to build a team of people. And for me, two very critical people in that team were my associate and assistant choreographer, Katie Spellman and mm-hmm. William Angelo, who are, it's critical their involvement because there are 22 children. So mm-hmm. we're outnumbered.
And you're a choreographer, and Billy Elliot is not only a musical, it's a musical that is particularly about dance.
Yes.
So that must have been a fun opportunity to be able to explore what sort of movements would
Absolutely.
Come from these characters.
Absolutely. Equally intimidating. You know, you're relying on very young storytellers to mm-hmm. to support 5 to 8 minutes of dance narrative. It's a lot, but it's also a challenge that I love mm-hmm. and really enjoyed, and the kids more than rose to the occasion. They worked so hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on Broadway, they have 6 months, and
yes.
here we have 4 weeks,
uh-huh.
you know, so it puts it into perspective a little bit.
Although I think that that's a little bit longer than the ordinary
yes.
rehearsal time.
It is, but for the children, Matilda has a lengthy process for children as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you start off sometimes with needing to create skills. These boys came to the table, Nick and Kyle, who
yeah.
play Billy, who yeah. are remarkable storytellers, both of them, came to the table with a big skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Elliot requires a mammoth skill set. So
yeah.
we had them in some acting coaching, some gymnastics training, extra dance discipline, flight rehearsal, well in advance of that month.
Mm-hmm.
Like it takes a long time to develop those skills. And boy, have they both grown tremendously, and they're both incredible in the role.
They are. I've heard it said that a very large part of directing is casting. So, how were you able to find them? And also the other actors in the show. Sometimes some of these people, I'm sure you've worked with
yeah,
many times.
I have. I think actors hate my casting process. because I take a long time to do it. I make sure that each person affects the whole. So you have to look at it track by track or role by role and imagine what that person's going to contribute to the overall chemistry of the experience. With the boys, we started off with, we had them for almost an entire day where we danced them for, I think we danced them for like 5 straight hours. We did a ballet class. We did, you know, really, really intricate dance. Then I had singing with them. Then I had acting coaching with them. Then we brought them back another weekend with work in between. We worked with them again for like hours and hours and hours. Then we did another whole round of that. Same with the kids. I usually spend around 12 to 15 hours with children before I cast mm-hmm. them because you gotta see if they can hang. Like, it's mm-hmm. a lot. They're in rehearsal with adults. A lot of the show is writing on them. We spend an awful lot of time with them. But I do the same with adults because every role is so important down to, you know, the last ensemble track. It's going to impact the overall story that you're able to tell. And boy, was I glad that I ended up with the cast that I ended up with, because they are remarkable, completely committed, and very brave. Very mm-hmm. brave.
Well, while we're on the subject of children, you've done a lot of work with them and for them. So you directed previously Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that that was another case where you found excellent child actors. So I'm wondering about the process of directing children, and also about how you approach differences between directing musicals and directing spoken language theater, which I know you've also mm-hmm. done. So is it similar? Well, I'm sure it's similar, but...
The thing with kids is that they need you to... They need your energy to be the energy that you expect from them. Mm-hmm. So for whatever amount of hours I have them that day, I am at whatever percentage mm-hmm. they're going to need to be in the show at every moment. Mm-hmm. So by the time Billy Elliot rehearsal would get done at the end of the day, you know, somebody has to like carry me to the car because I'm white. It's a lot of energy. They are completely capable. You just have to challenge them, and they will surpass your expectation. I speak to them the same way that I do as adults, except that I reiterate it 80,000 times, and I physically embody the energy that they need to embody, and that's where it gets tiring. And I have an assistant, you know, one who kind of acts as a disciplinarian and the other one who acts as like, you know, the fun person. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a team dynamic that, you know, motivates the kids. We build a community with them. We try to make sure that they understand the boundaries of the world that we're creating so that they can make intelligent decisions on their own within those boundaries. They know when they cross the line, or they know when they're under-energized. Like, they know. Mm-hmm. They know what the expectation is. But then they are empowered. So they don't do, like, we don't let them do these cutesy, meaningless things because we just never introduce it as a concept mm-hmm. because that's not real human behavior.
No.
We only focus on real human behavior. And when it starts to go to that place, we always stop and say, no, we're better than that, right? Let's not.
Yeah.
Would you actually react that way? And they go, no. And I said, well, then why are we doing it for 900 people? So that's kind of the approach that I take with kids. I am firm, but I'm very nurturing and loving. I'm a mom of a 10-year-old, so I kind of get it. And I think I'm a kid at heart too, and I like to get on the floor and play. And when they succeed, there is nothing more gratifying than watching them succeed. It is amazing. I opened a show the other night called Wonderland at Chicago Children's Theater, and our young actress who plays Alice came out for curtain call with tears pouring down her cheeks. And, you know, I just said she was just overwhelmed by the experience, and there's nothing more magical than watching that happen. Same with our Billies, just overwhelmed by the audience response, you know, and that pride that they will feel, and this experience will change them forever as artists. Mm-hmm. It's pretty gratifying, actually.
It must be. So, but I'm glad to hear you do treat musical the same way as you would try telling any story.
Absolutely.
About character motivation.
There's no difference.
Actors make choices.
Yeah. The only difference with the musical is that we shockingly have less time to rehearse it than a play. You know, there's an added component, and yet there's less time for it. And, I mean, to me, Shakespeare is a musical. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, like the language is incredibly musical. I often, the plays that I direct generally have a physical component, so to me there's almost no difference.
All right, well, so that's a little bit about directing children. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned doing plays for children.
Uh-huh.
So I imagine that process is also somewhat different. Because, you know, you've done both. You've also done a lot of work for Chicago Shakespeare and even some with Timeline.
Yeah.
So
The thing for me about plays for children is I never think about it as a play for children. I think mm-hmm. about it usually as a play for the entire family. Mm-hmm. And it has to appeal to everyone on some level. Mm-hmm. Because if there's something that's going to literally appeal to a three-year-old, then no one else is going to enjoy it. And even mm-hmm. the three-year-old will get bored of it after a while. It just requires the most honest storytelling that you could possibly put forth. Because they will let you know immediately if they are engaged or not engaged. And I think that, you know, I always try to balance it being visually compelling and the story being compelling. You know, there's a visual component that I think is required to mm-hmm. hold their interest. You know, balancing out how you introduce fear in a group setting like mm-hmm. that with kids, there's all those considerations. You know, they'll sit through a ballad from a young ingenue, but they won't sit through a contemplative ballad from an older man. Like mm-hmm. they're, you know, there's a real difference in what they find interesting. Mm-hmm. But I never ever think about it as being speaking down or. I just want to tell a good story that everybody that comes with that child is going to walk away and go, wow, we had a great shared theatrical experience.
It does. Yeah. Although Billy Elliot does have a ballad from an older man.
It does. It does. But that, I don't consider Billy Elliot a show for children specifically because there is a lot of language. I think it's really important to bring your kids to Billy Elliot. Yeah. I think it's important to talk about it mm-hmm. first because if language is something that bothers you, there is a lot of language that is related to their struggle, related to their education and class, that defines these people specifically. I don't find it gratuitous. I think it really does help define these people. And if language is something that mm-hmm. you have a concern about, talk to your kids about it, but do bring them because mm-hmm. it is really important. It's an important mm-hmm. story for them to see, especially young boys, you know, who need to be assured that, you know, the arts is a valid thing to pursue. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really important story for families to see. And I watch families walking out of Billy Elliot so changed by it and wanting to see it immediately again because mm-hmm. it's so uplifting and it's such a great shared experience for them.
And I'm glad that you said that because I do think Billy Elliot's gritty aspect is integral to the story. And I was going to ask you about who you think this show is for.
I think it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think very, very small children, it's a little yeah. lengthy. It's mm-hmm. too long for them. So you have to be conscious of things like that. But, you know, my 9-year-old son came and loved it, was so compelled by the storytelling. Mm-hmm. So it's a story for everyone. Mm-hmm. And it also deals with, you know, it deals with older men and older characters on the verge of extinction in their profession, which I think is very mm-hmm. interesting to our older audience members. I think it harkens back to a time when we relied upon our industry more, mm-hmm. and I think that is compelling to them. Mm-hmm. There's a grandmother character who talks about if she had to do her life over again, she would never have married mm-hmm. at 17. And, you know, there's a lot of it. I think it touches on all aspects of a family. Mm-hmm. There's the loss of a mother.
Yes.
That's really critical and, you know, a family unit redefining itself. I think it's for everyone. You know, it has such a huge heart that it really is inclusive of everyone.
I agree. Of course, the other spoken word related issue with Billy Elliot is that it takes place in Northern England,
yes.
which is a pretty different dialect and way of speaking than we're used to hearing mm-hmm. from English people, and was adapting that and just adapting some of the cultural specificity, something that you had to grapple with.
We did a lot of research, mm-hmm. of research, and we have a dialect coach, and we also have a conductor who is from that area. So when we go astray, he lets us know. There's dialect touch-up that happens all the time. It is a difficult dialect. It's in England, it's considered the most beautiful of all the dialects. So it's a really challenging dialect. And this year I've done Scottish and Geordie, which are similar and yet incredibly different. Mm-hmm. So the poor people who've been in both shows have really been struggling. But we do spend an awful lot of time on the dialect in rehearsal with Christina Dare, our dialect coach, who mm-hmm. takes people away for individual sessions. She's in every vocal rehearsal. Mm-hmm. We are very conscientious about accuracy versus understandability.
Yes.
You know, you have to be able to understand the mm-hmm. words. And if you have to sacrifice a little bit of accuracy, mm-hmm. especially when you have a choral sound of
yeah.
people singing together, then I think it's more important for people to be able to understand than it is for it to be pitch perfect accurate. But we do strive, we push it as far as we possibly mm-hmm. can so that you feel like you're culturally
yeah.
immersed in this experience. You know, you want it to be accurate, you want it to feel like you're there and a part of it, but it is a challenge.
And I think that you struck the perfect balance of that.
Thanks.
Well, even I know the show, but I still found it completely comprehensible.
I listen to it a lot with my eyes closed. I sit in the audience and listen with my eyes closed, so I make sure that I'm actually hearing and that the visual isn't informing me, you know, so that you really have to rely on your ears to make sure that you can understand every word.
Excellent. So, why don't we talk about some things that are coming up for you? Also, I think, what sort of work you would like to do in the future, musicals or otherwise?
Well, this year all of a sudden seems to be like the year of new work for me. I've been largely a revivalist up to this point, and I am now getting the opportunity to do a whole bunch of new work. I am reviving Disney's Little Mermaid at Chicago Shakespeare this summer, which will just be totally fun. But I do have a couple of original shows coming up. One is called Ride the Cyclone, which is a new piece out of Canada that's going to be at Chicago Shakespeare's Upstairs Space in the fall, which is this quirky, bizarre black comedy with a heart that I think people are going to be really interested in. There's nothing like it out there. It's such a unique piece, and I'm really excited to work on that. I'm also working on developing a new musical version of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid book series mm-hmm. for Minneapolis Children's Theater. And we're in the process of workshops and rewrites, and mm-hmm. we're in the early stages, but it will be produced at Minneapolis in the spring of 2016. So there's a lot going on.
That's a very bold choice for Chicago Shakespeare and how they're adjusting their venue.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm really happy that they are going to take a chance on this piece, because I think it's an incredibly cool, unique piece that will appeal to a very broad range of people. And I love that it's playing in the fall. It does have kind of there's a bit of a macabre aspect to it. It's about a glee club from Saskatchewan that goes to their final concert, and on the way they ride a roller coaster at a fair, and they all die. And they're dead from the beginning of the play. And it's a very, very interesting journey about mortality and about the randomness of accidents. And it's a really, really cool piece that I'm thrilled to be a part of. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
It sounds excellent.
It's really cool. The actors who are involved in it are... it's been a long time since I've seen actors this... just committed to a project because they love the material so much. And I think the audiences are going to really, really love it too.
Do you want to talk about the short Shakespeare program a little bit?
Yeah.
Shakespeare does.
I haven't done it in a while, and I would love to do it again because it's really, really satisfying. It's essentially taking a full-length Shakespeare that is in school curriculum and synthesizing it down to about an hour and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the challenge of that for me was always that you have so much plot to tell in that amount of time that the first thing to go is poetry. And as an adapter, it's every line that you strike out. You're like, oh, that's so beautiful. I don't want to get rid of that. But you have to make certain that they are getting the full story in that amount of time, and keeping it as creative and as and honoring as much of the beautiful language as you possibly can. But again, it's not about tailoring it to students for me. It's about making a smart adaptation of something that would hold up for an adult audience, a young child audience, or a teenage audience. Good storytelling is good storytelling. And if you do that, and if you are honest about it, it should appeal to almost everyone. You know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way I look at that program.
Which is also true of Billy Elliot, and was true of West Side Story, which I have to admit, because of that, when that show was written, I was surprised to have enjoyed it as much as I did.
It's a it is a classic for a reason. It is a very beautifully written piece of theater that I think, you know, it gets done poorly often. It's easy to go wrong with West Side Story. It really is. There's a lot of traps and a lot of pitfalls all in the material that if you go there, you could just go right down that rabbit hole and you want to really watch it. And for me, it was about, you know, making sure that people understand that we are dealing with the exact same issues today. It is incredibly relevant. All you have to do is turn on the TV and you see that now we just have guns that kill more people quicker. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've escalated from it being about fist fights and street corners to it being about, you know, a multi-million dollar drug industry that, you know, gets these kids involved, and then they feel that that is family. That is their idea of what it means to belong to a family, and a family where most of them don't survive. And it's really a sad, sad, you know, look into our society, but it's been going on forever. Mm-hmm. And we aren't making the necessary changes. And I love that people say, how are you going to end that story? You're going to end it with a note of hope? And I said, I don't think I can. Mm-hmm. Because we all know that maybe we'll take one day off, maybe we'll put the guns away for a day, but tomorrow, unless we change our social, our societal view, and unless we support these kids in a different way, they have no alternative but to go back to the exact same course of action that they were in the day before, because they don't have any other alternatives. You know, there's no one educating them, there's no one supporting them, there's no one, you know, we've got guns that anyone can get a hold of. So I couldn't see a way to make it this falsely upbeat thing that maybe they considered in the 50s, because they thought maybe we would actually learn our lesson. But we now see all these years later that we haven't learned. So I couldn't make it upbeat in a way that I know isn't accurate to our society.
And that's also a good thing, I think, that you approach these shows with a very strong sense of how they fit into some sort of an artistic purpose of addressing issues that people might be dealing with. It's not disposable entertainment.
Not at all. I'm not great with that. I'm not really your girl for disposable entertainment. Like even The Little Mermaid, we're digging into it and going, what is the message that I want to say to young girls here? Certainly not that you give up your voice for a boy. You know, it's more about realizing that maybe where you are born is not necessarily the place that you belong, and it's really important to honor who you are and go to a place where you can bloom where you're planted. So trying to find you have to find significance in every piece that you work on, you know. It's there is something to be mined from every piece, I think, if you look hard enough for it.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, I want to thank you for talking with us.
My
here
pleasure.
Billy Elliot plays at Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace through the 7th of June, I believe. So it is an excellent show, and I definitely encourage you to see it and to keep tabs on what Rachel Rockwell does in the future.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right, goodbye.